Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is Get the Life You Want. And the numbers to call if you'd like to speak to our special guest, Dr. Richard Bandler, is 1-866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. For those of you who don't know Richard's work, his books have sold more than 500,000 copies worldwide. I've probably only accounted for about 25 of those. Let me actually introduce Richard by introducing Richard. Richard, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very well. I thought sort of a nice way to introduce the new book, which is Richard's new book, is called Get the Life You Want, and it's available now. And it is excellent. And the way it's broken down, I thought we could break, since the show's broken into three parts and the book is broken into three parts, we could do that. And we could begin with the first part, which is about getting over it. And I, one of the story I wanted to tell to sort of set this up was I was watching Richard work one day and on a training, and this woman had been dealing with a trauma. She'd been involved in a terrorist bombing, if I'm remembering correctly, in the UK, and she was talking to Richard, and before, just in chatting to her, before bringing her up on stage to do a demonstration of how quickly it's possible to get over something, no matter how big it seems in your mind, she was already over it, which kind of ruined the demo.
she was on the bus, Michael, in the 7-7 explosions when they blew up the trains, and she was the bus that blew up. And unfortunately, it stuck in her mind, and she couldn't get on public transportation without seeing a backpack and freaking out. That in a matter of a few seconds, she learned to be uncomfortable. She also couldn't look into the future and see that there was any possibilities. She was living with the idea that death was imminent, which can kind of spoil your plans.
It does get on the nerves, certainly. Now, can you sort of explain in broad brushstrokes, how is it possible that something which seems like such a significant event, such a significant life event, and maybe somebody has been carrying with them for 20 years, 30 years, for as long as they can remember, can actually be overcome that quickly? Because that's certainly not the common idea.
Well, I know, but the common idea is that you have to go back and feel the pain completely. And actually, she'd been doing an excellent job of that already. That for whatever it was, 3 or 4 years, all she thought about every day was a big, bright picture of bomb and body parts. And, you know, she even had to get, given where she lived, she had to go to work, and she had to get on the same bus and go on the same route. And, of course, you know, and people still came on with backpacks. And so every day it just ingrained it in her mind, and she was so busy living in fear that she forgot that, you know. And the first thing I asked her was really quite simple, because she told me that she had this idea in her mind every day. And I said, well, if I came over to your house and I painted a really hideous picture on one of your walls, would you leave it there? And she looked at me and she said, no. And I said, well, then why would you leave a bad memory in your head? So I told her that what we do is dissemble it. So what I did is I had her start at the end of the memory, because this has a very specific end of everything blowing to pieces and going off in an ambulance. And I had the ambulance go back to the bus and the bus reassemble itself, so everybody was on it, and roll backwards stop by stop to her house. And the whole time I hummed circus music to her. And even though this, you know, was not to make fun of what happened, but to make it so that her brain didn't run it automatically. When you first shrink down the size of memories so that, you know, they're only 6 inches in circle, and then you start at the end and run towards the beginning, which people don't normally do, it makes it so that all the automatic programs and neurocortical pathways just don't fire off so automatically, and it makes them more manageable.
And so one of the things that I always find remarkable, no matter how many times I will take somebody through this, is that it's almost like people can't get back to doing it the way that they did it before.
No, it's not kind of like that. It's exactly like that.
So literally, it's being the pathways are being rewired in the brain.
Well, they're not so much being rewired. Remember, we manufacture neurocortical pathways with chemicals. And it's given that we have billions of them in our brain, you know, the stimulus that fires off that one, the backpacks, the bus, the people you don't know, all of those things have to run through a very particular circuit in the brain, and it's done ever so microscopically by size. So when you start at the end of the memory and run in the reverse direction, what happens is it literally flattens them out so that they can't trigger automatically. You would literally have to go back through the bad experience for real in order to reestablish the bad things. This is one of the things is human beings are fantastic learners. And the problem is sometimes what we learn doesn't work for us, and some most of the time it does. Even though we haven't seen the door, it's pretty much like other doors, and we can open it without even thinking about it. But, you know, we can also trigger fear that way. We can trigger doubt and all kinds of things which may not work for us. And this kind of wipes the slate clean. And, I mean, it's not everything that needed to be done with her, but it definitely was a big first step. Because once all the fear is gone, and, you know, then she can start to hang some new pictures in her head.
So I'd like to actually bring on, we're going to be taking calls throughout the show. The numbers to call if you want to get in, 1-866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Let's go to line four. Let's bring on Heidi in Helena, Montana. Heidi, welcome to the show. What's your question for Dr. Bandler?
Hi, thank you. Hi, Dr. Bandler.
Hi, Heidi.
Hi. Hey, I've done some NLP down in Denver and in Boulder in that area, and what I'm dealing with right now, my question has to deal with conflict. Mine has to do with complex PTSD.
Complex what?
Post-traumatic stress, where my situation is there has been different trauma throughout life that, you know, people have trauma, but lots of different trauma, and then a period of time leading up to some major car accidents where there was an incredible amount of stress, lots of things happening, boom, boom, you know, deaths and on
well,
and on.
That's how you got there. What do you still have? How do you know that you have a difficulty?
How do I know? Because I'm not functioning. I'm stuck in survival mode.
You're what?
Stuck in, it seems like, survival mode. I'm fearful often.
How do you know when to be fearful?
Seem to be a lot of triggers.
Well, yeah, but how do you know which ones are which?
How do I know which triggers are triggering?
Well, yeah, in other words, if you look at a donut, you don't become terrified, right?
Right.
Okay, but there
are
some
things. Can we deal with the donut phobia thing later for me? never mind, you guys carry on.
But in other words, so you kind of have to make a little decision. This is something I'm going to be afraid of, and this is something I'm not. I realize it happens very quickly, but you have to make some kind of a distinction.
Right.
How do you know when to be afraid?
For an example, is taking a road trip with my daughter. Both of these accidents happened with my daughter.
Well, yeah, but are you afraid before you go on the trip?
Anxiety starts building.
Okay, well, how do you build it? Do you make pictures in your head of bad things happening?
No, I don't.
Do you think about the bad past?
See, I don't have the flashbacks.
I beg your pardon?
I don't think typically I have the flashbacks, so to speak.
Well, yeah, but if you're sitting there making anxiety, how do you make it? You have to do something.
Right.
When you say you don't specifically have flashbacks, do you have just little tiny schnitzes and snatches of bad things?
I must. There must be little things that happen.
Yeah. Well,
one of the things I've been doing lately is snapping my wrist with a rubber band.
I beg your pardon?
Sorry.
That's a whole new cause of trauma.
Why not go for the full thumb screws, I would say. let me ask you to just try something. Like,
sure.
You know, if you were going to get in the car right now and go on a long trip,
yes.
Okay, and you were planning it, what would be the first thing that would go in your mind? If I asked you to drive across the country and see me, right, what would be the first thought in your mind?
Oh, about not driving at night.
Okay, but how do you know to say not to drive at night? First, you have to think about driving at night, don't you, in order to think it's a bad idea?
Yeah, because I don't want to hit animals.
Okay, so you must have some idea that you can hit animals.
Yeah, I hit two bulls ran in front of me.
Okay, so you already flashed back. That thing you said you didn't do, actually, you've already done.
Yeah, I guess I yeah. Okay.
Okay, but let me ask you, when you're thinking about hitting animals at night, how big is the picture? Is it like life size?
No.
Is it bigger than life?
No. I don't think so. See, I don't really see the picture. It's like,
well, take a little time. Take a look at it. Imagine you're driving down the road smashing an animal. How big is it?
Oh, yeah, I see it, like, in the windshield.
Yeah, well, but is it like a life-size windshield?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe
shrink
a little
it down
bit bigger.
So it's toy car-size windshield.
Okay.
And it's like toy-size cat smashing on the windshield, and you're a big person looking down at it.
Okay.
Okay, when you shrink it down like that, do you feel afraid?
Not as much, no.
Not as much, okay. Now try it this way. Start with the cat on the windshield and back up so it flies away from you.
Right. Right.
Okay, when you do that, do you feel afraid?
No.
Okay, now go back and try to make the first picture that scared you of driving. Ask yourself, say, I have to drive at night, and think about driving at night.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, do you feel afraid now?
A little anxiety.
Oh, well, see, so in 2 seconds, you went from big anxiety to little anxiety.
Okay.
Now, if you were to do this first in slow motion, like go back to the bad experiences, maybe the 2 or 3 that actually occurred, shrink them down to a 6-inch circle, start at the end, and make it so that everything flies back onto the car going in reverse, so that you take the bad experiences that gave you the fear and literally reverse them.
Okay.
If you did 3 of them and did them thoroughly, maybe throw in a little circus music while you're doing it. What will happen is it'll undo all the generalizations.
Okay.
Because if you're going to drive at night, thinking about being afraid is not a good way to drive.
Right.
What you really need to be is relaxed and pay attention. Because stuff does run out in the road, and if you're careful, you won't hit it. The only things I've hit in the past 30 years are things I aimed at. And unfortunately, a few of those got away.
Right. Well, I did try. I had heard about this process from a friend, and so I was...
Well, let me tell you something, Heidi. There are lots of people that kind of do this. In order to make this stuff work, you have to do it thoroughly. You have to do all the things.
Okay.
Part of the reason I wrote this book is because I keep having people that say, well, I went through neuro-linguistic programming, and I'm still afraid of heights. Went through neuro-linguistic programming, but I still have a bad memory. Well, actually, you went to somebody who called themselves a neuro-linguistic programmer, but that's not good enough. You have to actually do the techniques, and you have to be thorough about it. You take the worst memory, you start at the end, and you freeze frame it, and then you run it in reverse so it goes back to the beginning. And you do it so that it's faster than life, so it goes really fast, so that it settles in your mind. And you also got to do something to keep your feelings lighter while you're doing it. That's why I play the circus music, so it's a little bit silly. People walking backwards, talking backwards, cats flying off the window, animals running off to the side of the road in reverse. And if you can make it look silly enough, what happens is while you're giggling about it, it puts other chemicals into those neural circuits. So that when you try to run them forward, the fact that you had difficulty feeling the anxiety with just a short description shows you that if you did it really thoroughly, you could probably wipe this out 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, good. And the thing I didn't do when I was doing this was humming. That makes sense. It engages.
You didn't do what?
The humming, the music, you know.
Well,
that,
yeah, it always helps that play a little circus music. What you really want to have is something silly going on at the same time. Because if you can have something silly going on, you know, they always tell you you're going to look back and laugh. And my policy is, why wait?
Right. So, question. You roll it back fast or you roll it back
slow? Roll it back fast.
Okay.
Way fast. The faster it is, the more your brain can understand it.
Oh.
If I draw stick figures on a pad of paper and I flip through it, you can see the stick figure get up and dance.
Right.
But if I hand you one a week for 5 years, you wouldn't even know why I was doing it.
Right. Okay, good.
Thank you, Heidi.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. So Richard, we're coming up on our first break, but one of the things that I just want to highlight from that, and it's something I think you do a great job of explaining in the new book, which is Get the Life You Want, The Secrets to Quick and Lasting Life Change with Neuro-Linguistic Programming, is that really this is about education. This is about teaching the brain a new, more effective way of doing things.
Every single thing that's in this book is a lesson. You know, people always say, I need therapy. And I people get years of therapy. It doesn't do them any good. What I offer people are lessons. This is how your brain works. Do this, you get this result. This particular book, I got the idea from because I was in my kitchen looking at a cookbook. And I thought, gee, look at this. You know, anybody anywhere in the world can make a chocolate cake. Well, you should be able to get rid of a fear of heights just the same way.
Brilliant. And in the next segment, we're going to take more calls, but I also I want to go to the section about getting through Christmas dinner, but we're going to apply it to Thanksgiving. So we're going to be back with more of Dr. Richard Bandler and more of your calls. The book is called Get the Life You Want, The Secrets to Quick and Lasting Life Change with Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and you can learn more about Dr. Bandler and his work at www.richardbandler.com. We will be back with more Richard and more of your calls right after the break.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about getting the life you want with Dr. Richard Bandler, and we're talking about his new book called Get the Life You Want. And Richard, one of the things that for me has always been extraordinary in using NLP with myself, with my family, with clients, is how there really are just blatant differences between the way we think about things in our head. And you were talking during the break about somebody who was noticing the difference between good decisions and bad decisions and how they held them in their mind. I was talking to my son because he's somebody who loves sport and he loves practice. But anytime he got into a game, he would just freak out. And it really was like two kids, like a Jekyll and Hyde thing. And of course, when I asked him about, well, you know, what did he do in his head before a game as opposed to what he was doing in his head when he thought about practice? Well, you know, he was making these giant pictures and you know, basketball is his favorite sport. And, you know, in the pictures, there's all these really, really, really tall, mean looking kids standing over him. And all the, and then behind them is the grown-ups looking at him like, you'd better do this right. And, you know, whereas with practice, all he would see is like the ball and the basket.
And he would go 7 or 8 games, just score like crazy. And then he would go into a, what they called a slump. And so I asked him, I said, the same question, you know, when he was playing good, you know, what did he think like before the game? And he'd go, oh, you know, I can see the, am I making every shot, you know? And he goes, and it's like the ball moves in slow motion and I can see the arc of the curve. He goes, there's even a dotted line where I'm supposed to throw the ball. And I said, and when, you know, you're not playing well, and he goes, oh, he goes, everything is out of focus. And all the players look taller than me. And this guy had to be like 6'7". You know, so you know, people grow up in their body, but not always in their mind.
I know, and what's great is once you spot those differences, very often then the actual change is pretty straightforward.
As soon as it's clear, you know, if you start asking why do you have trouble, you know, you can come up with a million answers. But when you find out the difference in the procedure, then it tells you, you know, to fire off the things that work well, you know. Mm-hmm.
The other thing we did before we got too psychological on his head was we played him. I don't know if you remember the movie Meatballs.
Oh yeah,
with Bill Murray. We just played him the scene over and over again where Bill Murray's giving the pep talk to the campers, going, "It doesn't matter. These kids are rich. They're going to go out. You're going to wind up, you know, working for them anyways. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter." And that became our little mantra before games.
It just doesn't matter.
It was good fun. Let's
They're going to end up divorced and having to pay half of all the money they have to their wife. And you won't have anything, so you'll have nothing to give up. So you can find the real love
matter.
Of your life.
It just doesn't matter. Let's pick up on that theme, in fact. Let's go to line 8, Nicole in Boise, Idaho. Nicole, welcome to the show. What's your question for Dr. Bandler?
Well, since you mentioned divorced, I'm getting divorced, and it's been almost 18 years, and I'm having...
It's taken you 18 years to get divorced?
Yeah, it has.
That's a long divorce. Or were you actually happily married for a while?
Very, very happily for a while.
How long? 12 years?
Yeah, probably, about 10 years ago.
10 years?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me just throw out an idea to you. So you picked a guy that had a shelf life of 10 years. Okay? Just think about it that way. You picked a guy, he had a shelf life of 10 years. Some women can't find a guy and make it through to lunch. So,
right.
So if you think about it, you did pretty good the first time. Now, right. This time, you have already seen where this guy went stale. You know, it's like if you go into the store and you pick melons, you know, if you pick one that's too ripe, you don't get to eat it all. But, you know, if you, this time when you go out, you got to look for a guy with a little longer shelf life.
I hate checking in expirations, but...
Well, hey, you know, I had a woman, she was married for 35 years, and you know, and her husband had a midlife crisis and ran off with the secretary, and she spent 5 years being depressed, and I said to her, I said, listen, ma'am, you know, if you can pick a guy with the last 30 years, that's pretty good. Plus, if you figure out what his little idiosyncratic parts that you didn't like, maybe this time you'll get one that'll last for 50 years. You know, it's just, but if you sit around and start asking where did it go wrong and what's wrong with me and replaying every argument and every bad thing in your mind, then you're not going to be figuring out how to find something that'll really work for you. You know, the attorneys have designed divorce so that you can feel as horrible as possible so that they can drag it out and get more of your money.
Right.
You know, and you know, it's that thing. You know, if you get something dirty on your hand, you didn't realize it was there, and you stick your hand or your foot in dog shit, you don't just keep wiping it on your face. You know, you get to the point where you wash it off and you turn around and find a better place to walk.
Right.
But you know, so how do you make yourself feel bad about your divorce?
Well, you know, I think what it's second guessing, am I doing the right thing, which my heart of hearts, I know I am. I know it's going to be better for me, for our kids, but it's a very tough process not to look back and say, geez, am I doing the right thing?
Well, yeah, if you use that kind of tone, you could always make yourself be doubtful. But,
right.
You know, I mean, you've made good decisions in your life that were difficult and they were the right thing. And when you look back, they're the right thing. Can you think of one of those?
Definitely.
Have you ever made a really good decision in your life?
Definitely.
Okay. When you all right, now think about that good decision, and you still think it's a good decision, right?
Yes.
Okay. See, do you hear how sure you are about that?
Yes.
Now, think about this divorce and notice if the picture is in the same place as the good decision.
The end
result. That's a yes-no question.
Okay, yes.
Yes, it's in the same place?
Yes, it's in the same place.
Okay, is it the same size?
Probably bigger.
Well, you don't want it to be too big. You want it to be the same size.
Well, definitely at least the same size, yes.
Okay, so is it the same distance?
Yes.
Okay, now when you look at that first picture, the thing that was a good decision, you have a voice inside your head that goes, that was a good decision, right?
Yes.
Okay, now is that on the right or the left?
It's on the right.
Okay, and it has a certain tone to it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay, now when you look at this thing about the divorce, use the same voice while you look at it in the same place.
Oh. Okay.
Now, how do you feel about it now? Are you full of doubt?
No.
Oh, well, that wasn't so hard, was it?
No, I'm a quick learner.
Now, here's the big question. Whenever you get rid of a bad feeling, you really need to replace it with a great big good one. You start asking yourself, you know, just think, you know, there right now, running around on planet Earth, there are literally millions of guys that most women aren't looking at that are probably the perfect guy for them. And they walk right by them because they're too busy worrying about the past and they don't have their senses out. I think when people find the right person, it isn't just done because they interview them on a computer or something. It's done with a psychic sense. And if your antenna is out there because you're not filled with doubt, you'll put out your feelers and things will come to you.
Yeah.
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 So as soon as you clean these dirty thoughts up from your mind, open up your senses, turn on your electromagnetism, and throw out your fishing line. And remember, you got to kiss a lot of frogs to find a real prince.
Right. That's for sure. But not for 18 years.
Well, you can't keep kissing the same frog.
Maybe this time it'll work.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's it. I just need to, you're right, focus on what I want and what I intend.
Think about it. Now, when you think about it, are you filled with the doubt that you were filled with 5 minutes ago?
No.
No, you're not. Okay. Then move on.
Not at all. Thank you.
Thank you, you so much, Nicole. So again, one of the things that I love about the way that you obviously do it extremely elegantly, but really what anyone can do with the understanding of how their brain works is that they can begin to run their brain in a way that makes sense, in a way that, you know, they do more of the things that make them feel good and less of the things that make them feel bad and more of the things that lead them
and
to good decisions.
And you've got to have a little bit of a sense of humor, you know, because if you're too serious about solving your problems, then you make the solution as bad as the problem. You know, you got to start thinking, where's the upside to this, you know? That if a woman thinks she's a failure because after 10 years, you know, her husband fell apart at the seams and got stupid, that's not really a failing in her. She picked a guy that had a certain shelf life. So next time she'll pick a little careful. You know, she'll bang the melons a little bit more before she takes them home.
So I'm sure there's a metaphor there for how guys choose women as well, but we'll move on. So I just want to get to one of the, as I was going through the book, I think the exercise that made me smile the most was the handling Christmas dinner exercise. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, because that's such a unique strategy for getting through, a family get together.
Well, I think that, you know, it's oddly enough, these lovely holidays turn into nightmares. I don't know how, almost every client I've ever had, you know, it's fine, I'll solve their problem, and they call me 3 days before Christmas, and they go, I have to go and see my parents, or I have to see my wife's parents, and, you know, and they don't, you know, and then they get mad at them for doing things that they know they're going to do. And, you know, if they really ran through in their mind and every stupid thing that they know is going to happen and attached to it humor, what will happen is as the relatives do the annoying thing, you'll smile back at them. And then they can't do it anymore. It just fails working. You know, they come in and criticize you for not living up to their expectations or, you know, or for whatever it is. My first wife had religious relatives, and they would come in and they would go, you know, have you decided to go to church? And I said, well, you know, I'm Jewish. We don't go to church. And I said, we go to a synagogue, and even I don't go there that often. And, you know, they would say, well, you know, you won't be saved. And I said, so I won't be saved from spending eternity with you. There's a threat.
Better, isn't there an expression, better the devil you know?
Better the devil you know.
Let's go back to the phones, actually, with a different kind of question. Let's go to line one, to Catherine in Ontario.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, welcome, Catherine. What's your question for Dr. Bandler?
I have got my basic practitioner and in NLP, and I am wondering if, when I'm looking for somebody to do my master's with, does it matter what I ultimately want to do with my dream of what I want to do with NLP?
Does it matter who you learn from?
Yes.
Yeah, it matters a whole lot.
Okay.
When getting trainers in NLP, the magic word is licensed.
Okay.
You know, that licensed trainers have current up-to-date information. You know, anybody can print themselves up a certificate and say they're a trainer. But, you know, they can't say they're a licensed trainer, and they won't give you a certificate with my signature on it. Of course, my preference, if you're going for good training, is to come and train with me.
Okay.
You know, I do trainings all over the world, I also think it's a good idea for you to go, just don't go to one master prac or one practitioner. I think it's a good idea to go to several of each.
Okay.
You know, if you really want to get good at this, you know, you want to see how I do it, you want to see how Michael Neal does it, you want to know how John Lavelle does it, you know, you want to see different people using the same tools so that you can find your own style.
Okay, I did have two trainers for my practitioner because the first.
I beg your pardon?
I did have two trainers to get through my basic because I have some challenges. I have high spectrum autism.
You have high spectrum what?
Autism.
autism?
Yes, Asperger's syndrome, and I use the tools. People can't tell the person I was a few years ago from who I am now, and I'm really excited.
That must really annoy some people.
It does.
A couple of years ago, I got somebody who had supposedly the worst, most severe case of OCD they'd ever seen. She couldn't leave her house, and she wouldn't turn on the refrigerator because she was afraid it would explode, and she wouldn't keep silverware in the house because she was afraid it would kill her cat, and she wouldn't turn on the heater, and she lived in London. It was freezing, and I spent 20 minutes with her, and she totally turned her life around. Because I just gave her the tools to keep fixing it so that she would start making her life a happy place. And all the people from the OCD Foundation keep coming into the seminar saying, what the hell did you do to her? And that's, you know, the truth is if you have the tools, you can change. You know, a lot of people say Asperger's syndrome cannot be altered. And that's just nonsense. You know, obviously it is because you've disguised it well enough. You don't seem very autistic to me.
Well, I have my moments.
So do I.
Richard, yeah.
There are some days I pray to be autistic.
I'm looking at, I've been on disability for over 15 years, and I'm looking at getting off. And what I want to do is work with other people who have almost, have been on the system as well. And once you get on...
it's unfortunate that these systems are designed to almost to keep, you know, it's like welfare almost feeds staying on welfare.
Catherine, Richard, just going to jump in because we're coming up on a break. Catherine, can I ask you, if you stay on the line and you leave your details with the guys in the studio, Richard, can we send her out a copy of your new book?
Sure, you bet.
That would be fantastic.
I would love that.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Okay, we will be back with more of your calls, with more of Dr. Richard Bander. We'll be talking more about how to get the life you want. If you want to find more about Richard and what he does, go to www.richardbandler.com. We will be right back right after this break.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about getting the life you want. We're talking with Dr. Richard Bandler. He's the author of, about a dozen books, Using Your Brain for Change, Time for Change, Magic in Action, Frogs into Princes, Persuasion Engineering, Structure of Magic, and a whole lot more. And his new book is called Get the Life You Want, and you can get it at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And if you can't get it at your local bookshop yet, just go in and hassle them, and you will be able to get it shortly. So, Richard, the book, as we said at the beginning, you've broken it down into getting over it, getting through it, and getting to it. What comes up most consistently as the obstacles that people have to getting to it, to getting on with things, to motivating themselves to move forward?
Well, typically what gets in their way is themselves, their own brain. They either have doubtful voices or bad pictures, and from that they manufacture feelings. Sometimes people call it being blocked, and people say, I have resistance, like it's a thing. And they don't realize that, that you can alter your feelings. You can alter your pictures, you can alter your internal voices. You could literally take a feeling and pull it outside of yourself and turn it upside down and spin it in the opposite direction, and you'll feel totally differently. We're almost implied in a lot of psychological stuff is that somehow or other our mental facilities are out of our control. And if you have a scary, doubtful, anxious voice yammering away in your head, I mean, insomniacs are, they have a voice talking like a speed freak inside their head, and they wonder why they can't go to sleep. Where if it said exactly the same thing and said it in a sleepy voice and yawned while it talked, they'd be asleep in minutes.
I remember I was talking to Richard and I have a mutual friend, Paul McKenna, and I was talking to Paul, and he's working on a new book on sleep, and he said that he and Hugh just keep they can't tell if the book is really dull or if it's working.
Yeah, I got the third degree about sleep from Paul on the phone. Whenever Paul writes books, he calls me up and asks me loads of questions. And I figured this one was my opportunity to see if I could knock him out over the phone.
As long as he's paying the bill, it doesn't matter. Let's go back to the votes here. Let's go to Linda on line 5 in Tustin, California. Linda, welcome to the show. What's your question for Dr. Bandler?
Yes, my question is just I'm a worrier. I constantly worry about everything, and even nothing happens.
Let me ask you a question, Linda. When you worry, do you do it with a voice or a picture or both?
Voice.
You have
a picture. Both.
And is the voice that worries in your head? Does it sound worry-y?
Yes. I keep.
So you don't worry in a calm, relaxed voice inside your head.
Yeah, well, I do, but the problem is just I get very stressed out. Like my neck starts.
Well, yeah, of course you get stressed out. If you have a stressful voice inside your head, you know, in your brain, the thing that makes your feelings, the cortex of the brain, overlaps with your auditory cortex about 40%. And so sound and feelings aren't really totally different things. They're made out of the same stuff. And when you have a voice inside your head that's worrying and stressful and freaking out and talking really fast, of course it's going to make you feel stress. But what's one of the things that you'd stress out about? If you were the voice and you were talking to me, like, what would you say to me?
Okay, for example, let me tell you something. Like, I hear that my mother-in-law is coming, and I'm so afraid that, she's going to stay with me and I have to take care of her.
Okay, all right. Now, I want you to say the same thing, but I want you to say it like you just woke up in the middle of the night. Go, my mother-in-law is coming, and I might have to take care of her. Just say it to yourself inside your head like that. Now, when you say it in a sleepy voice, do you feel stress?
No.
Well, guess what I'd recommend? Fix the voice inside your head, and that way you can let your body relax, because when your mother-in-law gets there, she'll cause enough trouble on her own.
Yeah, but it's just not that. It's just like I keep picturing what will happen. And
bad pictures?
Yeah, and then how am I going to talk to my husband?
Let me ask you. If I went on Photoshop and took pictures of you and blew them up so that you were distorted and looked like you weighed 600 pounds and had tits hanging down to the ground, would you hang it on your wall in your house?
No.
Okay, then why would you hang all these crazy-ass pictures in your head?
Let me tell
you a trick to get rid of pictures in your head, because you already know what this movie is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now when you run the movie, you do it really well because you're good at it. Mm-hmm. But what I want you to do is to take the same movie, okay, only we're going to start at the end, right? Whatever it is of your mother-in-law coming over and causing trouble, start at the end of the movie and run it backwards. Right? And when you run it backwards, I want you to do it in slow motion so she looks like she's walking on the moon. Right? And put some silly music behind it so you see her going across the living room, boing, boing. Because the thing is you know she's going to come over and do the same crazy stuff she always does. And you're really faced with only one of two choices. My philosophy goes like this. Disappointment requires adequate planning. And if you try to want her to not behave the way she's going to behave, then you're going to be disappointed. But if you expect her to do all this stuff and it just makes you laugh, then you don't have to feel any stress. Okay, did you make the pictures I told you to?
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
now, think about your mother-in-law coming over. Do you feel stressed out?
No.
See? You know what? That's because it's in your mind. When people say it's all in your mind, that's like it's a bad thing, when actually it's a good thing. The fact that it's in your mind means that you can make it go backwards. Any thought going forward that's bad, you make it go backwards, and it'll suddenly seem funny. And then it won't work automatically anymore. You'll have to have whole new stressful experiences to feel bad, or you'll have to develop a better sense of humor and be happy for the rest of your life.
So I think that's your challenge, Linda. Just you have to choose between those two options. Get back to us next week. Let us know what you decided.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. You know, the thing that's just really apparent in listening to you even over the radio is it seems to me one of the absolute just crucial distinctions is that this stuff doesn't happen to us. We're doing it.
But it feels like it's happening to
us. It does, absolutely.
And it doesn't stop feeling that way until you actually do something ridiculous with it, where you make it run in reverse or you make it in slow motion, where you actually alter it and take control of it. You know, that if you have a voice inside your head that's, you know, stressing you out, even if you turn the volume way up so it stresses you out more and then turn it down so you can barely hear it, as soon as you take control of these processes, you learn it's your brain and you get to do what you want with it. It's the one area where you really do have control. And most people come in and what they're saying to me is they don't think they can have control, when it's actually the easiest thing in the world. It just requires a little practice.
And this is one of the things that we've been sort of nagging Richard to bring out a new book with his most up-to-date stuff for a while. And I think he probably, just to shut us up, finally did. So again, the reason Richard's with us is because we want you to go out and get his book, which is called Get the Life You Want.
Go to your local bookstore and nag them so they put it on the shelves.
That's right.
I've been out of the country for 10 years and people forgot who I was. They, you know, people started coming up to me and saying, have you heard of neuro-linguistic programming?
So listen, let's see if we can get one more in. Let's go to line 3 to Arlene in New York, New York. Arlene, welcome to the show. What's your question for Dr. Banner?
Hi. I was wondering if you do the same process for the things that tend to bring you resistance. But of course, I've been listening.
I'm sorry,
to the show,
if I so. Do what?
Sorry. You would use the same process for things that tend to bring resistance, but of course I've been listening to the show and I could see that obviously it does, and I'm like, okay, I just want to run out and buy your book.
Well, that's a good response. We like
right?
that.
Yeah.
Take
yeah.
that feeling and double it.
I will. yeah,
but when you say I feel resistance or I'm resistant to doing something, it's because the way you're thinking about it makes it harder than it actually is.
Exactly.
And anything that you want to do, you know what I did with a client one time? I had a client that told me that they just couldn't get anything done. And so I told them, I said, I'm going to mail you a CD. You listen to it. And when you're done, then I'll work with you. And I took a CD, I put it in one of those plastic boxes, and I super glued it and sent it to him. And I called him I had a courier bring it over, and about 3 hours later, I said, did you listen to it? And the person said, God, that was the hardest CD to open I've ever done. She goes, but I finally got it open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I look at people, and they'll spend 25 minutes and force a pickle jar to give them the pickles. But when it comes to happiness, they don't have that determination. And, you know, your birthright is to feel real joy, real happiness, real motivation. And most people motivate themselves by letting things get so bad they have to do something, rather than realizing the best way to motivate yourself is by making desire so big that any picture you make of something you want, you can make a little one, or you could make a great giant big one, just like going to the theater and seeing a movie. The bigger the screen, the stronger the feelings. Bad feelings, you make it a little screen, and really good feelings, you make it really big.
Yes, thank you. I just was getting moved, and I realized I really just have stopped being present to what it is that had me.
You've got to think about what you want. You've got to make it a picture that when you look at it, every fiber in you goes, I want this. Nothing will get in my way. It has to be as important as the pickles in the jar.
Yeah.
Determination is the strongest, most powerful thing. With determination, human beings can accomplish anything. And if you think that the things you've been determined to do and have done, and take that feeling and just keep spinning it in your body, and then start thinking about your hopes and your dreams and your desires, and then get out the door and keep that feeling spinning and get stuff done.
Thank you. That really is the answer.
You bet.
Thank you, Arlene.
Thank you, Michael.
You know, I don't think I've ever asked you. Do you have a favorite technique, Richard? You know, one that you just really love doing.
Well, actually, I do have a technique that I really love doing. my favorite technique is to think of the funniest thing that somebody can possibly think of. You know, I'll have them search through their memories until they think of something that the minute they think of it, it just gives them the giggles and they can't stop laughing. And I get them to spin that feeling of laughter round and round. And then in the center of that picture, I open up the thing that they need to laugh about, whether it's the past or the struggles with the future, whatever it is that's blown out of proportion. I just keep opening that picture up while they're still laughing. Because if you can get people to laugh and start enjoying things, you can do just about anything. Humans are really tough creatures, you know, they really are. I mean, they survive war and pestilence and poverty and in-laws.
I mean, it is something that I'm always actually amazed at, you know, when we meet people that we work with on the trainings, that, you know, people have been through a lot, and they not only, you know, survive it, but by the time, you know, people just learn a few basic things about how to run their brains differently.
Yeah, but they have to keep in mind that survival isn't enough. You know, you can survive, but the fact that you can survive really means that you can do better. You can make it so that the fact that you can get through tough stuff should mean that every moment, every instant, you should be spending wisely. The currency of a life are the moments that you spend. And, you know, if you just kind of wait for good things to happen, you get old and live in regret. And, you know, if you really felt like you were spending every cent you had, you'd make sure you got something for your money. You should certainly do that with your life force and with the moments of your life, the time with your children and your wife and your job, you know, that no matter what it is, you can enjoy it.
Well, we're gonna let you go enjoy your new home. Thank you very much. If people want to find out more, is richardbandler.com the best place to go to find out about trainings
purenlp.com is the best place.
Okay, that's www.purenlp.com.
Really has the trainings that I'm doing in the U.S. at this point. And richardbandler.com lists all the stuff I'm doing internationally. It's always fun to travel. And, you know, they can buy this book, and I have another one coming out in November.
The Return to Transformations?
Well, it's Richard Bandler's Guide to Transformations. It's not like the old book. This is a totally new book.
Excellent. Well, maybe you'll come back and join us again when that one's out.
Anything you want, Michael.
I appreciate it, Richard.
All you have to do is ask.
Thank you very much. My guest today has been Dr. Richard Bandler. His new book, Get the Life You Want, The Secrets to Quick and Lasting Life Change with Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Go out, get the book. If Richard is coming within, 3,000 miles of you, go and see him. However much you enjoyed him on the radio, he is amazing live. I will be back next week with a new show. Until then, my thanks to Joe and Steve in the studio. My thanks to you for listening. I will see you very soon. Bye-bye for now.